The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
To go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Not because they are easy,
but because they are hard. Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday Space Show program. I am your host, coming to you from a cloudy, possibly rainy San Francisco Bay Area on a Sunday afternoon. It's great to be here, and I thank all of you for tuning in. So let's do the announcements. This is an open lines program, which means whatever you want to talk about, as long as it's space-related or STEM-related, well, it's your show. So you'll want to give us a call, but for right now, the toll-free line is turned off. That's to allow me to make the announcements, read the sponsor messages, tell you a few things, and then we'll open the phone lines. So, again, it is open lines. We definitely, absolutely do want to hear from you, and hopefully this will be an active phone open lines program like it was a couple of weeks ago. So, a couple of announcements to get out of the way first. Our phone number, for those of you who do want to call us, is 1-866-687-7223. So, again, the line is turned off right now. I'll let you know in a few minutes when I turn it back on. But there are no call screeners, so be patient. We'll answer it, bring you up on air as quickly as we can. You can also use email to communicate with us. It's not as much fun on open lines, but don't hesitate to use it. The email address is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then you can also communicate with us through our blog. So that is, go to the website, thespaceshow.com. On the far right, you will find upcoming shows, and this is the first show listed. And so open it up. That is the archive page, by the way, for this show. And comments, as always, are down at the bottom. So you can comment as a guest, or you can log into a Discuss account. And as soon as you post your comment or your question, I'll be able to bring it up on air. So those are the three ways to reach us. Toll free, 1-866-687-7223, email drspace@thespaceshow.com, and our blog for this program at thespaceshow.com website. Speaking of our website, thespaceshow.com, the detailed newsletter that is on our website, center right, you can't miss it, will be updated after today's program. It's updated after every Sunday program. So it will have all of the details for the programming this week, and it will have the coming attractions, what we have planned. And we've actually got some dates planned already for July. So be sure to scroll down on the website newsletter and check it out, and you'll see who's planned. And remember, if you can't listen to a live program, you do see who's, you know, on the agenda for coming on the show. We're happy to take your advanced pre-show email questions and ask them during the live show for you. So please take advantage of that opportunity. Everything we do is archived. You can listen right off of our website or easily download the program. On the upper left is a menu, and we have a store under the support menu. You'll see it. This is where you could get T-shirts, coffee mugs, things of that nature with the Space Show logo on it, plus some other items that may interest you. Check it out. Your feedback on the store is always welcome. There is also a button there in that upper left menu for Listen Live, and this tells you how to listen to our shows live, also how to listen to them via archive. So many of you want to tell friends how to listen to a Space Show program. I urge you to just copy that link the URL for Listen Live, and send it to them. And then I'm happy to answer any questions that they might have. Center Right also is Support the Space Show. So remember, we are a 501c3 nonprofit with one, O-N-E, GiantLeapFoundation.org. Your support keeps us on the air, because without it, we would not be doing these programs. It also keeps us distributing our content for free. So do support us. Remember, as a 501c3 nonprofit, we offer you a tax deduction if you pay federal U.S. taxes. And if you're a California taxpayer, you can also get a deduction. We're a California public benefit corporation. So visit our parent nonprofit, 1ONE, GiantLeapFoundation.org. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to get a hold of me. And that is at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Now, some of you who are observant may notice that we're testing out a program of Google Ads on our website to hopefully improve our revenue status for the Space Show and to help us out a little more. Your feedback about that is welcome. And we don't pick the ads that appear. I guess Google does that. And I think they are customized to searches you might be doing on the Internet using Google. I'm not 100% sure how that works. But your feedback on our Google Ads test for the next 30 days is certainly welcome. You can send it to me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And assuming we keep the program in place, I'll let you know down the road what kind of revenue it does generate for the Space Show, if any at all. So, and again, feedback is welcome. Don't hesitate to give it to us. We do have well, let me first say that we are a copyrighted and trademarked program. And we do encourage all of you to download our shows or to distribute the content. We want more and more people to find out about the Space Show and about the benefits and importance of becoming a spacefaring nation. So you can do that by actually sending out the shows, and we've reduced the file size. So a 90-minute show is maybe 11 megabytes, so most email programs will actually handle that now. But you could also just send out the URL for people, and they could just go get it and download it themselves. If you have any questions about that, don't hesitate to ask me. There are a couple of rules about it. So one is don't do anything commercial with our program. Number two, no edits or clips of the program. Don't put anything up on YouTube or any other website, including your own. And written transcripts are not permitted, even if those written transcripts are for your own personal use. So please read our full copyright statement at the bottom of each and every website page for thespaceshow.com, as well as onegiantleapfoundation.org. And if you have any questions or comments, please don't hesitate to get a hold of me. We do have sponsors, corporate sponsors, and you can see their banner ads going across our website. Please check them out from time to time. And we really appreciate our sponsors. We could not be doing the Space Show without the assistance from our sponsors. And we have a couple of sponsors for each segment of our program today. So for the first segment, the Integrated Space Plan is a sponsor, and this is the detailed 100-year forecast of our future in space. The plan includes Earth-to-orbit and reusable in-space transportation. It also depicts development of the Moon and Mars, followed by a base in the asteroid belt and space settlements. And you can see that at thespaceplan.com. While viewing the plan online, you can also click on any of its 500 elements and get much more information. The plan is also out in poster format. I have one. You can order it from the website. It's a huge full-color poster, and it's guaranteed to get you even more excited about our future in space. So all of this is available to you at thespaceplan.com. And then the Space Foundation is a sponsor, and they have their 33rd symposium coming up. You can still register for the 33rd symposium, which is 2017 must-attend space industry conference. Global space pros, leaders, and decision makers all convene April 3rd through the 6th in Colorado Springs, Colorado. The website for one-stop all shopping for the symposium is spacesymposium.org. I believe my panel where I'm chairing a panel of all NASA centers except center directors, except for NASA Ames. For some reason, the Ames director is not participating. But in any event, that has been moved to Wednesday morning. And I believe it's a 60-minute panel, but that also may be changing. So hopefully I'll see you there. Remember, if you are there and you want to meet up with me, email me for my cell phone number, and we can plan a meeting place via text mail. So I'm looking forward to that, and we thank you for participating. A couple of other announcements that I want to make before I open the lines up for open lines. And one is, many of you have requested that I play Golden Oldies while I'm gone, because starting next Sunday, April 2nd, I will not do a live show on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. So the way I've decided to handle this, and you can see an example of it in upcoming menus, because it's already there for Sunday, I've called it Suborbital Sunday, and I've listed three interesting shows that relate somewhat to suborbital flight for you to choose to listen to on that Sunday, and I've put the links there for each of the shows. So you can listen to any of them. Of course, you can access any archive show you want. You don't have to do that. But you wanted recommendations, so my recommendations are the first program ever that Jeff Grayson, at the time he was CEO of X-Corps, came on the program to talk about what X-Corps was doing, spacesuits and other stuff like that. I'm playing, or I'm offering to play nearly 4-hour recording of the winning of the X Prize. So we had a reporter with us in Mojave. He interviewed lots and lots of people there. And then I had some co-hosts in New York and elsewhere. So it's a nearly 4-hour broadcast if you want to hear it. But this was the program where the X Prize was won by Spaceship One. So you might want to listen to that or listen to parts of it. I know it's a long, long program. And then I put up the classic, most classic ever debate on the space show, which was John Powell and Charles Pooley. John was a guest, and he was talking about his plans for airship to orbit. And Charles Pooley called in to say all of this was hogwash, the laws of physics won't allow an airship to go to orbit, and the rest is history. And they had a back-and-forth physics debate that to this day remains the classic space show debate of all time, at least in my opinion. And so I have that program listed there if you want to hear it. Now, unfortunately, Charles is no longer with us. He unexpectedly passed away a couple of years ago. He is really missed. But John is still with us, and he is still working on going with Airship to Orbit, as you heard from his show a couple of weeks ago. So those are my three suggestions for Sunday. When I do the newsletter for next week, I'll have three suggestions for Monday, three suggestions for Tuesday, all of those will be different themes, and three suggestions for Friday. So stay tuned to see what I'm suggesting you listen to while I am gone. Another important announcement, we have a show planned for 9:30 tomorrow morning rather than the typical Monday time, which is 2 p.m., So Coyote Smith, retired colonel from the Air Force, wants to talk about his plan for creating a United States Space Corps. And here's the deal. I'm having trouble getting Coyote to RSVP the show. So he has gotten the three email notices, and I've gotten no response. So if you tune in tomorrow at 9:30 and there's no show, it means that Coyote was a no-show. There's a lot of use of the word show there. So I'm hoping to hear from him. I do have his cell phone number. I'm doing my best to make sure this show materializes, but that's our status right now. And if it is not going to go down, I will post it on the upcoming show menu so that you will see that it didn't come down. Or I may just remove it. From the upcoming show menu and re-identify all the shows for the following for the rest of the week. So, but it is at 9:30 a.m. tomorrow. There, no matter what, there is no Tuesday, there is no Monday 2 p.m. show. So suggested topics for open line. So first of all, Capital has sent in a comment on the blog, and he posted it. And this is a possible topic if any of you guys want to talk about it. The president's weekly address to the people about space exploration, and he gave a website, which is whitehouse.gov. If any of you want to listen to that address or are familiar with it, and you want to talk about what President Trump had to say. Also, Zimmerman's paper on capitalism in space, why SLS is not as desirable as commercial space launcher. I put the links up to the paper again on the blog for today's program, and some of you may have had time to read it, and you may want to comment on it, or you may want to do some additional commenting on it if you commented on it the last Open Line show. So that's out there for fun. And hopefully you will read it, and if you have something to say, we'd like to hear it. There is also an article that former astronaut Alan Bean, who walked on the moon and is an artist, gave an interview to an Australian radio station. And in that interview, he talked about why, in his opinion, aliens or the extraterrestrials had not visited Earth. And maybe some of you saw that article or the interview, or you might want to Google it real quick, Alan Bean, why ET has not visited Earth. And you might want to talk about that. I'm not going to tell you what he said. Maybe some of you will actually look it up and bring it up, and then we can discuss what he said, okay? There is an article, and I don't know how many of you saw this or not, but NASA is planning to start human trials of a drug to reverse aging, because they want to use this reverse aging drug for their astronauts going to Mars. So I'm not giving you any nonsense. Well, it may be nonsense, I don't know, but this is a real news story. So some of you may want to comment on that. I'm assuming you could find the article by Googling NASA reverse aging pill for astronauts on Mars or something like that. And they want to start the human trials on this drug within 6 months. Okay? President Trump signed a NASA space bill the other day, and jokingly he made a comment with Senator Cruz and said something that I've been saying for years on many space show programs, and that is, let's send Congress to space. And of course I want to send them on the untested, never flown before SLS. And you can read between the lines all you want on that. That's my vehicle of choice. But, of course, it's not going to happen. But it's interesting that Trump thought that, too. I'm sure he was joking, but I just bring it up in case anyone missed it. And then there is a recent article in Forbes magazine where President Trump has been seriously asked to begin a space solar power program. And some of you may have read the article in Forbes, or you may find it real quickly while we are, you know, doing these announcements and suggested topics. And so if you want to talk about the Forbes article, you're certainly welcome to do so. They think we should start space solar power right away. What do you think? You think Trump, President Trump, is going to do that? Personally, I don't think he's going to do that. But, you know, I don't know who his science advisor is, and I don't know what their priorities might be. And so I doubt that they would want to commit a program or money to starting space solar power. But, you know, I could be wrong. And maybe some of you think that they should do that, and it's justified. So, listeners, I have turned on the toll-free line. And you are welcome to call us, and I do hope we get some calls on this Open Lines Sunday. And again, our toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Your topics are also welcome. You don't have to discuss anything that I've brought up or mentioned. You can choose whatever it is you want to talk about yourself. And we definitely want to hear from you. Now, there have been, and again, the line is open, so you can call any time. After the last open line show, there have been lots and lots of blog calls. Excuse me, not blog calls, blog posts, primarily dealing with the gentleman who proposed the Skyhook program or project when he called the show. And I think many of the blog posts got off the topic, but Eagle, which is the gentleman who proposed it, did respond to everybody's comments. He fiercely defended his Skyhook project under various levels of criticism and assault. And so I'm not really sure if all of you thought his responses and his answers were fine. Eagle wanted to come on and do a full space show program with me. And I turned him down. And y'all might want to raise hell with me for that. I'm certainly willing to step into the hot seat. But here's why I turned him down. So at the time he made the request, the only real feedback I had seen on the blog was were critiques of his idea. And I had received two or three emails privately that did not want to post on the blog because they didn't want to get involved in an exchange of emails with him and play that whole blog game. I mean, it's not just with Eagle. It's in general. You post something and someone else posts, and, you know, it just goes around and around and around in an endless loop. And they didn't want to get involved with that, but they were very, very highly critical of it. And, you know, were to say they were negative would be an understatement. So I didn't have any positive feedback. And honestly, I'm not endorsing the project. Listen, I wish the guy well. I had many, many, I had a couple of other exchanges with him. You know, I don't believe the project will materialize. I don't think he can make it turn into policy or get traction behind it. But I'm an open-minded guy. And also, as you know, my approach and interest in space comes from business and economics and finance. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. I've learned an awful lot about science and engineering for the last 16 years, or nearly 16 years of doing the space show. But if you guys out there are at arm's length, I'm not looking for anybody to load up and stack this so that Eagle gets a 90-minute show, because shows cost money, and I want them. There's just, you know, some projects that I'm, you know, open line seems applicable for. Let's just leave it like that. But if some of you that are independent, arm's length, and not being coerced by Eagle or any of his followers or advocates, and, you know, you just really, truly objective from the heart, think that he should have a 60-minute or 90-minute program, then email me, and I may reconsider my positioning with him. But he would get a legitimate interview. It would not be an infomercial interview. It would not be a soft pedal interview. He'd get asked really tough questions. He would not get an easy skate by thing. And some of the answers that he gives would probably be called into question too. So, Eagle, if you're listening, and I told you before, you're certainly welcome to continue to call open line shows when you want to. Just because you get to be on a space show program doesn't mean you're going to get a show that makes you look really great. The show is not going to set out to can your butt. We don't do that on the space show. But you would get some really hard questions demanding credible answers, which I don't know that you could respond to, and even though you think you might be responding to them, you might not be. So Anyway, I'm looking for feedback from listeners, and it's there if you want it. And the only reason I bring it up is because blog comments on his project proposal that he did on Open Lines for the Skyhook have been really extensive, even though some of them have veered off topic. So I'm just throwing that out there for you guys, and it's there if you want it. We do have a caller on hold, and I hope the phone works, because lately somebody's been calling us, and we don't hear them when we answer the phone. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to Open Lines. Who are you? Where are you, please?
Hi, this is Kim in Mexico.
Hi, Kim. Good to hear from you again. Are you there?
I had a couple of things. One thing is that I saw on Russian Space Web last week that Kaveh Guzno, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but they're a rocket company in Ukraine, has serious plans to create a spaceport in Nova Scotia.
I saw that too.
Which, of course, being a Canadian, I think would just be sort of awesome. So I was sort of happy to see that and hope it will actually happen.
I know where Nova Scotia is with latitude and longitude, and I know where it is on a map. I could find it with my eyes closed, kind of like pin the tail on the donkey, except I'd be a lot more accurate. What would be in, I mean, you're Canadian originally, but I don't think you're from Nova Scotia, but what would be the launch weather like to launch from there? I mean, how many days a year would you have for launching? Now, I know the Soyuz is pretty much an all-weather launcher, so it would certainly do better than an American launcher, be it a government U.S. launcher or SpaceX or Blue Origin, because they're fair weather boys. But what can you tell us about what kind of launch weather? I just think it would be dismal to try to get really good launch weather out of Nova Scotia.
Well, they're a Ukrainian company, so I imagine that they know how to deal with that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, and their rockets are all weather. You know, Soyuz launches in some really crappy weather that an American rocket would never launch in. So maybe it doesn't matter for a Soyuz.
Yeah, and they're 45 degrees north, the launch site that they've chosen. And Nova Scotia, I mean, you're right on the coast, so that helps a bit. I've never been there, but their winters are a bit milder than what I'm used to being in Ontario. But, you know, I think it's just something that you deal with.
It would just be what?
It's something you deal with. I think that they would be able to. They're saying that they can launch for $45 million, 5 tons to LEO. So, you know, it's not a huge rocket, and, you know, I imagine they just know how to deal with it.
Well, yeah, I think as long as it's a Russian rocket, again, if they're thinking that SpaceX or Blue or ULA is going to launch there, they're so weather sensitive and winds aloft sensitive that I doubt that they would have very many launch days in Nova Scotia. But it's interesting. I'm sure Canada would welcome it with open arms.
Oh, I think that's, you know, a big reason why they chose it. I mean, Nova Scotia is really struggling. The fishery collapsed, and that was their main industry. So I imagine that they would get assistance. And apparently they wanted to locate in the United States, and they couldn't. So what do you know?
Well, it'll be interesting to follow that. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. And I check the Russian space web, and Anatoly's frequently on Hotel Mars as well. So we'll be staying on top of that and following that to see if it really happens.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'd really want to move to Nova Scotia, but, you know, that makes it a lot more attractive to me.
It's on the coast.
It is.
But they have some hellacious winter storms. So anyway, well, and maybe you'll be part of their launch infrastructure, and it'd probably be fun for a while. What else is on your mind?
Well, you did mention Eagle's work, and I had some exchanges with him, so I thought I didn't respond to his last response to me. I thought we were getting too into the weeds, and I decided to leave it. But the thing for me is that I think he needs to be a bit more specific. I mean, I have never boned up on orbital mechanics the way I need to in the long term. I'm just too busy right now. But the big thing for me is that he talks about vision and being worth it in terms of the collision risk, but that is not, you know, the satellite launcher industry is not, they don't care about vision. They care about their satellites. So if you can't give them a figure that convinces them that their station-keeping costs and their collision risk is not going to be raised by your installation, I think it just kills it right there.
You know, what does it for me is that there's absolutely no interest in the launch community to pursue a direction like he talks about. You know, the direction seemed to be streamlining manufacturing services to reduce labor costs. We've talked a lot about programs like that. Reusability as a way to lower. And then, of course, people are always arguing about the heavy lift, this and that. Do we need it? Do we not need it? How big is heavy lift? You know, things of that nature. But something as out of the box, whether he believes he has solid engineering for it or not, there's no interest in it, and no launch company is going to pick it up, and no policy that I can see is going to pay attention to it, and I don't know how he's going to get the money to promote it for anything. So there are a lot of good ideas, as you know, Kim, in the space world, and they never go anywhere, and they never will go anywhere. And just my own take on it is that he's in that category. And if he doesn't want to be in that category, he needs to come up with an action plan that takes his project out of that category. And the burden of proof is on him. I don't think, you know, anybody's going to step forward and take the lead and do it for him. I may be wrong on that. Maybe some company will think this is the best thing ever since chicken soup for the common cold and run with it on his behalf. I mean, you know, strange things happen and possibilities like that exist. But I just don't think that the world right now in launchers is going to move into a direction that would accommodate or have an interest in what he's talking about or put any money into it. I mean, maybe you think differently, but, and I'm biased and that is my bias. I'm being upfront about it, and I know he doesn't want to hear that, but I've told him that also in emails, so it's not a surprise to him. If he can prove a way or show a way to break out and compete, God bless him. Go for it. You know, I certainly wouldn't want to see anything stop him, you know, from being able to accomplish his goals. You know, I think ideas shine when you have more light shined on them. And so if his idea has merit, let the light shine on it and let him put it into action somehow.
Well, the thing for me is that I focus strictly on the tether segment of his concept.
Right.
Because that's something that I'm working on as well. So you know, the thing about the rest of it is that the rest of it is something that a lot of companies have pursued and the military has pursued, and there's a lot of complexity there, and if the amount of work that's been done on it by a bunch of different companies has not gotten it to a place where it's
there's no momentum, there's no drive for it. It's not as if it's been a deep dark secret that's never ever been brought to the forefront before.
And in terms of the tether part, actually, Robert Hoyt's company,
Tethers Unlimited,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's done really good work on this, you know, and he has a company, and he has a lot of contacts with NASA. He's done other work for NASA. So if there was an opening for something like this, I think he could do it. So if he hasn't, it's because there's just no...
He doesn't have interest in...
Yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting to know if Eagle has ever made an effort to communicate with Robert Hoyt and the other person who's really good on tethers, and he's been on the show a lot, and I see him frequently at AIAA meetings, and damn it if I'm not going to draw
Joe Carroll?
Yeah, Joe Carroll, thank you. Joe has done lots and lots of work on this with NASA and others. He has among the best artificial gravity ideas I've ever read. I mean, Joe really is exceptional. He's in San Diego. And I don't know if Eagle's also, by the way, in San Diego. I don't know if Eagle's ever contacted Joe Carroll, if he knows about him or anything like that. But, you know, Joe had an interest in that. Joe's got connections. He could probably advance it at least a little bit. He doesn't have money, but he could at least advance it maybe a little bit among people that have connections, you know, that kind of advancement. So, Eagle, if you're listening, actually, you should try to make contact with Joe Carroll and Robert White. And you can find them all over the Internet. They're very, very well-known people. And they really know, you know, tethers and things of that nature, just as Kim is talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot of good material online if you dig about this stuff. You know, NASA sponsored a report 100 pages long that I downloaded, I can't remember from where, that went into a lot of different varieties of different systems, but they don't want to touch low Earth orbit. And, you know, because they don't talk about it, they wouldn't say why, but I imagine the reason why is because of the collision risk. They just can't calculate it.
Well, that and, you know, the real truth is, you know, if you can streamline your manufacturing cost and lower your labor cost and go to reusability, chemical rockets really, you know, do work well for getting out of Earth's gravity field. You know, that they're not so great for doing much more than that because there are other ways that you can do things that would be faster or more cost effective. But most of those advanced propulsion ways are not for getting out of Earth's gravity field. And it's hard to beat modernizing chemical rockets.
The area where I think that he really is onto something and that he does emphasize in his writing is that in the long term, you know, if you solve these other issues, and the approach that I've taken to it has gone to the long term and used a somewhat different approach that helps with the collision problem, because I think that's the big problem. But if you were able to go large with a tether, a vertical tether like he's talking about, and put a really big anchor mass far out, what we work with is a 200 kiloton asteroid. And then you put a tether down from there to 250 kilometers above the surface. The thing is that what you would get is the tether foot moves at about 4.5 kilometers a second. So if you have a rocket coming from the surface that only needs to get to that speed in order to be grappled by the foot, and you handle the technical issues involved with that, then making a reusable rocket that only has to get up to that speed, give you all kinds of extra margin to reinforce the structure so that you're absolutely certain that you use it safely hundreds of times. So then you've got a super reusable rocket that isn't on the very edge of what's technically possible.
Eagle also talks about the space elevator, and you know, that's also pretty long shot. So that has problems that have not been resolved, even close to being resolved for at least use on Earth. In fact, there are not even any materials for it on Earth. But, you know, there's an application on the moon because the materials don't have to be as strong, or Mars. So, and that remains to be seen down the road if something like a lunar elevator or a Mars elevator might someday come into being. But I think for him to be promoting that as something along with Skyhook, I think is a really far reach. So that's just
vertical tethers are a lot more doable than elevators, even on the moon.
But of course you got to get there and start some kind of program. I got a note from Madhu, who I'm sure you know from USC. and I'm talking about, he's talking about coming back on the show, but, you know, he's talking about all this lunar moon talk and stuff, so, and aren't I being excited and about, you know, Falcon Heavy and this and this, and so, you know, me being, maybe I should call myself Debbie Downer instead of Michael Listener, but, you know, rhetoric doesn't work for me, and so I look for reality, and, you know, there is a lot of rhetoric, but it's not going anyplace. There is no policy. Nobody's making a policy. There's nobody at NASA. You know, Congress isn't even thinking about space, unless Trump is really going to send them to space. That was per his comment. I wish he would, but that's another story. We don't have anything yet as a solid plan for returning to the moon, but there does seem to be a lot of talk and a lot of smoke and maybe a lot of interest. I see Mark Whittington wrote another editorial on this subject the other day, and is also talking about all the talk about returning to the moon, hoping that it leads to something, but it hadn't led to anything yet. And you know, we're now coming into the fourth month of the year where all of this talk has been on, but I understand that they're all occupied with other problems and other issues, and I seriously doubt that space is a big priority for most of the people in Congress and government right now. But, you know, at some point, Kim, all of this supposedly exciting, wonderful lunar return talk that has everybody thinking we're really going to go back there needs to be translated into action. And I still don't see that.
Yeah, I haven't paid much attention to it because it doesn't convince me at all.
Yeah, we're on the same page. It, you know, see action and then you get convinced.
Yeah, and of course, it's not really what I do. Of course, my line on this has been that if you want to have a serious set of missions to the moon, or anywhere, but the moon is the place that makes sense, you have to think long-term. Because the only way you're going to excite the public about the possibility is to show them something that's worth it. And if you're going to do that, you have to build permanent infrastructure that would actually allow a large number of people to be there for a long time. And that just involves so much commitment and so much work that it scares people off. And nobody even proposes plans like that anymore. You know, the days back in the Apollo days where people would propose actual plans for permanent lunar settlements are long gone. But you have, if until you can go to that scale, nobody cares anymore, because all you're doing is sending a few people there to sort of wander around and then come back. To the average member of the public, that's all that's happening. And I don't blame them. You've got to show them something that's exciting to them. And then they're willing to make the long-term commitment to do that. And it's only in the long term that there's real serious benefit. But you get, there's a tipping point. There is a serious tipping point. And if you get beyond that, then suddenly it's all downhill from there, and the benefits start rolling in.
No argument for me. What else do you want to talk about?
Those were my things. I'll clear the line. And
how is your work on Moonwords coming?
Well, the phrase that always leaps to mind instantly whenever anybody asks me is that there's so much to do.
Well, there will always be so much. It'll never be finished. They'll always, like the Winchester Mystery House, it'll always have much to do because you'll keep evolving it.
Yeah, it's true. But what I really yearn for right now is to get to the point where I think I have something that is well-rounded enough and clearly enough expressed that it can start going out there and knocking on a whole bunch of doors and calling a whole bunch of people and saying, hey, would you be willing to sponsor this? Can you get people to help me with it? Would you be interested in working on it? And that's the thing that still seems like it's surprisingly far off, considering what I thought in the beginning.
Well, keep moving toward it. And, you know, one of these days it won't be as far off in your perspective.
know, I can see what I need to do, but it's not going to be easy.
Well, if it was easy, it would have been done before by someone else.
This is true. I'm still so surprised that nobody has, you know, breezed past me because they know how to do all this stuff and created their own. But
we'll
see what happens.
Yeah, so I don't think you can glean much from the fact that you're surprised no one has passed you. You have taken on something that is complex and time-consuming and difficult, but I think when you do it, the reward will be there as well, too.
Yeah, I think so. That's certainly why I still spend all my time on it.
Well, keep us posted and keep checking in with us, okay?
Will do.
Thank you very much, Kim. Appreciate hearing from you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, listeners, that opens our toll-free line. If you, too, would like to call us, and it is 1-866-687-7223. So remember, we do have just the one toll-free line. And if it's busy, it's because somebody else is using it. And if you want to use it and you've waited, you think, a sufficient amount of time, email me and tell me that you're holding and you would like access to the toll-free line, and I'll move our caller right along. Now, some people didn't do that a couple of weeks ago, and we held some callers on for a long, long time, and I'm sorry about that, because I want to make room for as many callers as possible. So, again, there's only the one line, and if you feel you've waited a sufficient amount of time, go ahead and email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and I'll do my best to move our caller along. We have another caller on the line, and good afternoon. This is David, and welcome to the Space Show. Where are you, and who are you?
This is John in Fort Worth.
Howdy, John.
Yeah. Well, I was seeing this Alan Bean thing. I looked at that article.
Did you go look it up?
Yeah, I did. Well,
so it is for real. I don't think it's fake news.
But I think he's taking a little bit of a idealistic viewpoint. I mean, we have no idea what. Well, I think the biggest reason why one would argue aliens aren't here, if they aren't, it would be the technical infeasibility. Given the probability of a civilization sufficiently advanced to do it, it's very difficult. Would it be close enough for them to get here? And would this be where they would come, even if they were going somewhere? You know, I mean.
Why don't you tell the listeners why Alan Bean thinks they haven't come? Because I didn't tell them. Remember?
Because if they had come, they would be doing. They'd be altruistic and being good, doing good things to help us out.
And we're too violent.
Yeah. So. Well, now, there's right, itself is a possibility if you want to go the other way, but I'm just saying, yeah, I think you could either assume that civilization would be, altruistic, or maybe they're altruistic and wise enough to realize that messing with us at a certain stage isn't helpful for us, perhaps, too.
The prime directive?
Something of that sort. Or, the other possibility, suppose we are violent, we don't know how. I mean, if they are here, then that must mean that travel is much more easier than we would think based on current science, I would think. Otherwise, they're not here. You see what I'm getting at?
Or somehow some civilization mastered it, if they're here.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, that's possible. But I'm just saying, what if we're closer to it than we imagine? Let's say within 500 years or something. And let's say we are considered to be too violent. Maybe they're taking measures right now to calm us down, and we just don't realize that's what all this intervention is.
Well,
the thought that's occurred to me.
It might depend on what civilization they're studying to determine if we're too violent, because, you could study different groups of people and come up with a different answer on that, given the mix of violence around the world today.
Perhaps for their standards, they're all too even the milder ones are pretty bad, and the bad ones are extremely bad.
Why do you think he would even make a comment like that? I mean, I was surprised that he even made a comment like that.
I am a little bit, too. I don't know. I have no idea why. I guess this has been an ongoing dilemma, right? I mean, the Fermi paradox, everything else. I mean, why aren't they? But the general view, I think, would be the mainstream science point of view would be that the energy requirements and the technical difficulties of making interstellar travel, even from the nearest stars, would be so prohibitive, that's why it hadn't happened. I mean, we're having trouble getting the budget together to go back to the moon or let alone Mars, and here we're talking about somebody actually crossing a much, you know, something where take a lot longer, a lot more effort, more of their resources, right?
Well, maybe they have a different economy than what we have, too.
That's possible. They like to get into things like lifespans and things of that sort, too, but or what sort of, you know, I mean, that's why I say it's almost a lot of imponderable, so to try to guess why an alien civilization, assume it's just because they're altruistic, they might be. They might not be. I mean, a lot of our ideas on that, I think, have to do with our own evolution and the kind of beings we evolved from and the kind of, you know, we're mammals and, you know, rare or young. And a lot of these family traits are getting generalized to the broader culture and the mind of those who are altruistic. But if they're from a totally different kind of species with a totally different kind of, you know, being, I mean, you know, a different kind of, well, I mean, you know, like, say, insects, for example, or something, you know what I mean, the hive mind, or whatever. I mean, we don't know what you'd be dealing with is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
But it could be something so different that they might not, what we think is right and wrong might not even mean anything to them, you know.
I'm just surprised that Alan Bean would even make this comment. I mean, maybe he has a big interest in the topic, and of course we're not all aware of it. We don't know what.
That's true. Well, some of the other astronauts have had some. Edgar Mitchell had some strong ideas on the topic too, right? I mean,
well, yeah, but he was known for, you know, some kind of new age, you know, experiments and philosophy. He started the Noetic Institute, which at the time was in Sausalito, and then it moved. And he's done the Noetic Institute does a lot of consciousness and other types of research and studies. And in fact, it fits very neatly with that physicist we had on a couple of weeks ago about the consciousness of stars. Matloff, I think, was his name. And in fact, him called in and mentioned someone from the Noetic Institute, Dr. Dean Radin, who had written a book or published some paper that she thought might be relevant to the Dr. Matloff discussion. So Edgar Mitchell started that organization, and he did those psychic experiments that we all found out about later on when he was going to the moon. So it wouldn't surprise me with Edgar Mitchell. He was also interviewed on the Space Show, and so was Alan Bean, by the way, in earlier years. And but I didn't necessarily, I wouldn't have associated Alan Bean with that. But if it had come out that Edgar Mitchell said something like that, I would absolutely think that that would be normal for Edgar Mitchell.
Well, that's true, but the main point, it helps support the cover up, right?
I don't know. I can't.
I had to say that.
I don't know.
Maybe the powers behind the cover up says it's time for somebody else to put out another.
I mean,
one piece of the puzzle.
I'm just
kidding a little bit with that, but you know what I'm saying. I just think it's his own viewpoint. That's a general viewpoint that advanced alien beings would be benevolent. In fact, even those that think they're already here, a lot of back in the 50s, there were people that had those kind of cults and stuff. You know, thought they were here to do something good for us, right?
What else is on your mind other than Alan Bean and aliens?
Well, I guess the thing about the administration and the moon and all that's an interesting topic, and I'm kind of encouraged with what's happened on that, on the space subject for the administration, because I had no idea what the attitude would be, you know, going into it. Although Trump, being a product of the time period he was, might have looked upon the space effort of the 60s very positively. That was the hopeful thought. The other thought was, well, what's to gain from it economically, you know, so maybe he would be against it from a budgetary point of view, you know, so I didn't know. But it looks like he's fairly favorably, NASA survived with their budget essentially intact, and he's talking about realistic programs, I guess, if you're talking moon rather than running off to Mars, which is a little bit more fanciful, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he had made some statements during the campaign that made people think that he didn't care about space and had no interest in it. But I will say one thing for all the rhetoric that's floating around and some of the things that he's said, and he did sign that NASA bill the other day and stuff like that. He does seem to have a genuine interest in space and does seem interested in doing something pretty cool and great in space. So, you know, it's not like what he said in the campaign at all. You know, right. In the campaign, he talked about using space money to fix potholes. Remember?
Well, I mean, you have to get elected first. Then maybe he thought that would be what the public wants to hear. I don't know. I mean, I just think, you know, it does seem like, though, that, I mean, given if you look at their proposed budget and all the slashes and things that he wasn't overtly for, you know, I mean, he was overtly for infrastructure programs, so transportation came good. He was overtly for defense, that came up, and so forth. But when you look at everything else that's getting slashed, and NASA's the highest of the things that didn't get increased, you know, which is 1%.
Yeah, but it didn't get slashed very badly either.
No, NASA came through with shining, I mean, 1%. I mean, you know.
So that's, of course, this budget will not be the real budget if there's.
No, that's what he's pushing for. I mean, right. Obviously a lot of the plus-ups will come down and a lot of the cuts will come back to normal. I mean, you know, that's the way. I presume that's all part of a negotiation. Anyhow, I mean, when you talk about big increases in the budget, even things I like in 1 year, I mean, you know, there is a question of how quickly you can utilize the money efficiently, too. I mean, you know, I mean, if you threw, you know, a 50% increase at NASA in the next fiscal year, could they efficiently really use that much?
Probably not.
Yeah, that's what I mean, and that's why, you know, in the defense area, there might be areas such as personnel retention. You know, people that would be put out in the pasture might be retained. Training might be increased. You could have more fuel use and buy more spare parts. You could do all that stuff pretty quickly, munitions, you know. But major programs are multi-year in nature, you know. Even to buy a major airplane generally is about 3 years from the order to the delivery, you know. So, you know, that's – so, I mean, there is that bow wave effect, you know, of, you know, trying to, you know, use it. And the same NASA has a lot of R&D to get anywhere. Certainly we could stop cutting things and maybe get things on a reasonable schedule, you know, get the commercial crew flying and get the SLS flying and so forth, you know.
What is your take? You think all this lunar rhetoric talk that Kim and I were bantering around a little bit, do you think we're going to see a return to the moon?
Well, yeah, but it really happens is another...
I
think that's the direction of the policy because... I understand my cynical attitude was all the Mars stuff, I think, during the Obama administration was a deflection. By setting an objective that wasn't near-term, you essentially can do little to nothing in terms of near-term investment while keeping the hope alive, if you will. You know, it was deliberately designed not to actually make a major commitment, is my thought. But it, you know, keeps the bureaucracy in place, and you can do studies and... you know, whatever. He's supposedly going to cut a lot of the earth sciences, the global warming stuff in NASA back. He's going to try to maybe spend on exploration.
Well, as I said, this is not going to be the budget that gets approved, and we may not be on a budget. We may be on CR. So,
yeah, that's another issue. Yeah. I don't know how much reprogramming you can do on... Yeah, that's well, yeah, because right now, I mean, if we realize we haven't even got a cabinet completed yet. I mean, there's still, what, 3 or 4 members that haven't been put through the Senate yet?
Uh-huh. And
no deputy, I don't think a deputy of any deputy has been approved yet to any cabinet office, let alone a NASA administrator. You know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we should ask Senator Schumer to come on the show and talk about why he doesn't want to do any of this.
Well, I guess his idea is to prevent Trump from implementing his policy but not letting him have the personnel to do it with. I mean, I assume that's what he's doing.
He wants to be a gigantic obstructionist, and, you know, he's doing a pretty good job, in my opinion, and, of course, the administration takes the bait all the time, which is not healthy, but yeah. I don't want to turn it into a political show.
I'm just saying that as far as, you know, things happening, I mean, that is going to be a factor of getting a budget, you know, without... You know, getting just the CR, it may be the situation, too.
Yeah, I'll just announce again, I am 100% bipartisan, disgusted. So, we can leave it at that.
All true independents, I think, would be disgusted.
maybe some that actually care about the country that identify with one of the two parties might actually be disgusted. If all you care about is your agenda and ideology, then you're probably championing your guy. I don't know.
Well,
anyway, go back to space. What else do you think we're going to see SpaceX fly two people to the moon? And what I haven't asked you for that your thoughts on that yet. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a question of schedule. I doubt it will be on the schedule they're saying, but I presume once we get the you got to get the Falcon Heavy flying, which is I guess supposed to happen sometime later this year, right?
May at least a test flight or something late
yeah.
this year. So we'll see.
I guess the question is when are they going to be, and then you also have to get the crewed the commercial crew Dragon capsule flying too, right? I mean,
And you need a launch license. And
that's a good question. Would they give them a license? It seems like they'd have to have commercial crew actually flying first.
I don't know. I don't know. I think the license.
Like it could be the test flight, huh?
Could be political.
It could be the test flight. That's what I'm saying. I mean, when they actually get the thing ready, it's going to have to be flown at some point, right? I mean, then the Dragon. What do we call it? We used to call it the Dragon, right? Well, they got some name for it. They keep changing the name, but I'll just call it the Crewed Dragon.
I think it's Dragon 2 or Dragon V2 or something like that.
Anyway. At one time they were calling it Dragon Rider, I think, right? The Crewed Dragon. Once they get that developed and flying, I guess it'll have to be a test flight. I presume the first one will be unmanned, right? Typically. Maybe not, since they already have the unmanned one flying all the time.
I don't know.
So my thinking is the idea is going to happen, what they were saying, in 2018 or something.
Yeah, but that may slip.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, let's push it back to 20, maybe. Once they get all those elements done, I guess you could do it, right, if you got people willing to pay for it. I don't think they're going to deny it because of a license. If they have all the equipment in place to do it, I wouldn't think they would do that to them.
I don't either, but, if NASA wants to do it with the SLS and the NASA program becomes competitive with the SpaceX program, then they may not want the SpaceX program to interfere with the NASA program, so who knows?
Couldn't Elon send out a tweet, though, that he's being held up by bureaucracy and Trump would jump on? No, I just had to say that. Well, I don't know. I guess they could do it to them, but I really don't think so. I think if they actually have the wherewithal to do it safely, I mean, if they can make the case, I doubt. First of all, it doesn't really say anything about SLS's viability at all. What they're doing wouldn't. Well, I don't want to start that argument up again, but it isn't even an Apollo 8, really. They're going to just do a loop-to-loop and free return like Apollo 8 would have done if it hadn't have entered lunar orbit, right?
Right. It's not going into lunar orbit, from what I understand.
It's just going to do a free return and come back.
Right.
It's a viable mission, assuming that, I don't know, they're going to do one test flight and make sure that everybody says that this thing, this Dragon, is moon Mars qualified or whatever, but I mean, as I remember, there was a lot of concern even with the Apollo missions about the reentry from that orbit and that trajectory, excuse me, I should say, coming back in and to hit at the right angle and the correct angle, I mean to say, and you know.
Yeah, he talks about the heat shield as Mars qualified, whether it is or not, I can't tell you, but they talk about the Dragon heat shield could come back from Mars. So, there's a lot of issues that they have to work out, and I think it'd be really cool if they did it, and depending on who the group is that's going there, that could also be really cool if they got great personalities and they're really good in front of a camera. You wouldn't want some stick-in-the-mud nerd or something to be representative of going to the moon. That wouldn't be much fun.
So they said they're going to pay for it themselves or most of it? Or
something like that, yeah.
I think if they make the case that they have all the, the technical details worked out, I just doubt the administration would actually just blackball them like that so you can't do it. I mean, that would be, for one thing, that would totally outrage the commercial part of the space business and create political blowback for NASA that they probably don't want. You say that would be a threat to SLS. I mean, but really, I don't. Well, that's been an issue that's been discussed with somebody else that I might stir up here. Is can the current Falcon Heavy, which is more advanced, I understand now that I've been reading up a little bit on this, that these things are been redesigned. The Falcon 9 boosters are much more powerful than the earlier ones. And so now maybe it has the ability to put something up there. But I think for doing a real moon mission, particularly with landing, I don't think it's really that competitive. I think you really need, even the early SLS, you need the full SLS, the 130, the big one, to really do a credible moon mission with a single rocket, I think. Otherwise, you're doing something like an Earth orbit rendezvous and then a lunar orbit rendezvous and, like a lot of maybe transferring propellant or buddy tanks, or it gets a lot more complex as an operation, let's put it that way.
I'm getting a couple of people ringing the gong that they want to call in, so
okay, well,
wind
it's
it
almost
up.
Probably time for you to do your break, isn't it?
Unless I skip it, but do you have anything else you want to throw out there, or is that it for right now?
Oh, I guess I've said my piece for the moment.
Thank you, John.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Listeners, the line is available even if I go to break, but I do have an email to read before we go to break. 1-866-687-7223. Rick Kwan sent in an email unrelated to any suggested topic. This is a blog post that has flown under the radar dated March 23rd, and it's on the line's already ringing. It's on the Mastin website, and it says, in a nutshell, MXP-351 is a proprietary bipropellant being developed by Mastin for applications like landing on the moon. They have done some test fires so far. It is considered a green propellant combo, is hypergolic, which means it ignites on its own contact, has an ISP of about 322, and is potent, is potentially storable for years. They have been getting technical support, no exchange of funds, from NASA Catalyst program. The line on the investigation seems very promising for things like Earth on orbit or deep space maneuvering. However, I'm not a propulsion expert, would like to know what other more knowledgeable listeners think. You can read Rick's post on the blog, which is where it is, and I got it through the blog. So that's there if anybody wants to look it up, see what Mastin is doing, and comment on it. And we already have another caller on hold. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you, please?
Hi, David. This is John in Fremont. Can you hear me okay?
I can. What did you do for the phone?
You know what? I called you on a landline.
Oh, well, that makes a difference.
Sorry about that.
Go for it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Forbes article. The author is just recommending that Trump fund space solar power. But there are some interesting quotes in here on a couple of companies. But this, you know how you are, David, and it, as far as due diligence goes, and there's a lot of, shall we say, aspirational excitement and, it looks like vaporware to me, but there is a company called Rebeam Space. Have you heard of them?
No.
Rebeam, R-E-B-E-A-M Space, and their CEO says that they have a concept for carbon nanotube technology to reduce the mass of space-based solar power satellites to about 115 metric tons. And so he's claiming at a cost of $340 million, his company can reach profitability within 2 years of launch. So I thought you might find that amusing. But
How is he launching?
He didn't say. I mean, there's just a paragraph in here about that. So the author's quoting a few people who are working on space solar power. The other one, of course, is Solaren here in California.
Oh, yeah, they've done great, right? They've really...
Yeah, and so their CEO, you know, is still honing his patented technology while seeking investment partners, and they say by 2018... they expect to negotiate power purchase agreements with a major utility to have a working 250-megawatt satellite in Earth orbit by 2025.
So they have been talking about that for close to 6 or 7 or 8 years. I think that even was in the Bush term. And, they said that they were going to have a deal with Southern Cal Edison and PG&E to buy their power. I tried way back when, for a long time, to get people from Solaren on the space show. And I was actually in touch with real people at Solaren. I mean, they responded. And I don't remember the exact reasoning and what happened, but clearly there was nobody who wanted to take the ball to do it and talk about it. And they kept postponing for a big, I think it was something like, we have a big announcement coming up, and we want to do it to coincide with a big announcement. Of course, there was no big announcement. And, vaporware is probably a very polite way of talking about a lot of these things. Did you bother to go to the Rebeam Space website? Do they have a website?
They have a promotional video site. And the founder and a few people, I think they came out of Singularity University. And I think they're really new, so they just have a video, you know, touting their concept, and that's it.
Yeah,
there's not a lot there.
So did they come out of Singularity University with any money to do anything?
I can't find any more details than what's in this article, so to be continued.
Okay, so... Rebeam Space and Company is a wireless power transfer company that develops wireless power for unmanned aerial vehicles. I don't think that that's what we're talking about, right? So here's one for Rebeam. I'm looking on the web to see if I can find them. For new space people. But there's nothing about the company. There's absolutely nothing. They're located... maybe in New York, I don't know. Okay, so
yeah, let me send you a link because there's a few companies out there called Rebeam. So let me see if I can send you something more on this.
Five big ideas from Singularity University. Is that what you saw from last year?
The founder, the CEO is, let me see, it's a interesting name, Gadhadar Reddy.
Is that a name?
Yeah. Gadhadar.
Okay, so they spell it. Kind of weird. Okay, I found it on the Singularity website.
Yeah, and his last name is Reddy, R-E-D-D-Y. So,
Gadahar Reddy, Alexandra Paris, I guess that's a woman, and Jordi, J-O-R-D-I, that's probably a woman too, Bass Esparago.
Right.
So, listen, more power to them. And they hope to have their space-based section of the system deployed with a SpaceX Falcon rocket launch. So during the program, the team conducted a case study of the energy transmissions from the Sahara Desert to London to demonstrate the cost decrease that their method would provide. So, what can one say? Good, more power to him. I don't think, as I said earlier in the show, that Trump is going to pay much attention to starting space solar power. I'd be surprised if he does.
Well, you know, it's sort of infrastructure, but...
And Kim says, tell me you have licensed the bandwidth to transmit the power, and I'll take you seriously. Well, I'm not going to tell you that, Kim. I haven't gotten your comment, your web link yet. Did you send it?
No, you actually found it.
So oh, okay.
I think, yeah, you're good.
Okay. So, listeners, if you're looking for it, it's RE BEAM. And most of what it is on a Singularity website. So if you just keep going down the Google listings for one at Singularity, then you'll find it. And then you have to scroll down to Singularity to find it. But who wrote the Forbes article? I don't have the article in front of me.
Yeah, the author is a guy by the name of Bruce Dormeny, Dormeny.
Does he know anything about this, or is he just writing an article for Forbes?
He's just writing an article for Forbes.
Well, for all of you out there that are big advocates of space solar power, don't hold your breath just yet.
Right, so we'll keep an eye on it.
That's right. And what else is on your mind?
That's it for me, David. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. So, you know, we do a lot of programming on space solar power, and I've had a lot of very serious guests on, and I did that Air Force programming not too long ago about space solar power and stuff like that. So there are some absolutely serious efforts to bring this about, but there's a lot of uphill challenges to do it, and money, of course, is just one of those uphill challenges. But if you want to talk about it, I'm up for it. The phone number, which is clear if you want to call, is 1-866-687-7223. And given that we have a lull in calls, and I hope we don't have a permanent lull in calls, I am going to take a quick break. So everybody stay where you are. We do answer the phone during the break, and it is 1-866-687-7223. Back in 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
Welcome back, everybody. Part two of our Sunday Open Lines program. I am your host, David Livingston. We do have a caller on hold. Caller, sit tight. I got to do our sponsor messages. Also, a minor little apology. I'm fighting a lot of allergies, and you may hear that effect on the microphone today, and I'm trying to avoid that. But if I'm not 100% perfect and flawless, I apologize. This has been a bad season for both allergies for me as well as Pepper, my Siberian Husky friend, because she too has allergies. And, well, I don't know what it is this year, but I wanted to go see an allergy doctor, and I had to wait 7 weeks to get in to see the doctor unless I wanted to cross the bridge and go to San Francisco, and I didn't want to do that. We do have sponsors for the second segment of our program today, and I want to bring them to your attention. So Celestis is one of the sponsors, and they are the premier global leader in providing Memorial spaceflight services. They've been doing that for quite a while, since 1995, and you can visit them at Celestis.com for more information. And they have the next Celestis Lunar Memorial spaceflight coming up just around the corner, and they're taking reservations for this flight, which will fly cremated remains of loved ones and or DNA to the moon. Moon Express, one of the contestants for the $30 million Google Lunar X Prize, is hosting the Celestis Lunar Mission, and that will take off later in the fourth quarter near the end of this year. Last year, the government approved the Moon Express mission to the moon, and just a few weeks ago, they secured all their financing for the flight. So the ingredients are coming together for the second Celestis flight to our nearest and celestial neighbor. The moon is a uniquely compelling location to remember a special life. And with the Celestis DNA service, you can also fly your own DNA there as well. Join families from around the world at the Cape, at the launch site also in New Zealand, for this ultimate mission of purpose. So again, check them out. Celestis.com. And then Orbital ATK is a sponsor. They are the global leader in aerospace and defense technologies, the partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense programs. And our friends at AIAA, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, are a sponsor. They have over 30,000 individual members, 88 countries are represented, and 95 corporate members. They're all busy shaping the future of aerospace every day, advancing the state of aerospace science and technology, increasing our knowledge of the universe, and bringing the worlds closer together. Join us and get a lot more information by going to their website, AIAA.org. Let's see who our caller is. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. You're first up on the second segment. Who are you and where are you, please? Hello? Caller, are you there? Did you hang up? Caller going once. See, they didn't hang up, listeners, because I don't have a dial tone. So they're calling on a crappy phone line, probably. So going once, going twice, going three times. So, caller, if you can hear me, you need to call back, but you need to use a different kind of phone line because that's probably the problem. And you can also email us if you can't access a different kind of phone line. But you're welcome to call again. But the fact that you're still on the line and we don't have a dial tone tells me you have a phone line issue. So we want you to reach us, so do call again. I've disconnected that call, and sorry about that, listeners. I don't know what kind of phone line they're trying to use, but that's been happening a lot lately, and maybe it's time for me to play another show on phone line requirements, but I'm not going to do that today, but maybe that's going to be upcoming. Anyway, our toll-free number, and it's ringing, so hold on. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you, please? Oh, come on. So, caller, you need a different kind of phone line because we can't hear a thing you're saying, if you're saying something. I'm really sorry about that. Let me see if caller ID is telling me who or where you are. Okay, so I don't think that this is Pam. because the timing is all off. Hello? We almost got you. Hello? You want to try whatever you did again? We almost got you. Well, okay, caller, we can't hear you. So you may be able to hear us, but we can't hear a word that you're saying. So they're trying again. Let's hope that your phone line works this time. Hold on. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Are you there?
Can you hear me, David?
Yes. Who is this?
This is Michael Listener, New Hampshire.
Were you the one trying to call us?
I just tried to call a minute ago, and apparently you couldn't hear me, but I could hear you over the phone.
So I don't know what kind of phone line you're using, but this is getting to be an annoying problem of late with some callers. But, yeah, we don't hear you, but I know the line is still open because it hasn't gone back to dial tone.
Okay, but you can hear me now, right?
Yeah, now you sound fine, so you must have called in on a different phone line or said a prayer or something.
I'm on my cell phone, and I said a little prayer before I dialed it to make sure I got through.
Well, it worked.
Okay. Hey, just wanted to pop in for a few minutes, and I know you probably talked about this earlier. I'm getting a little bit late, but President Trump signed in the NASA Authorization and Transition Act this past week, and I'm not going to go, you know, talk about everything that's in it, but one thing that kind of bothered me is I saw a lot of things in the media and on social media, people complaining, well, you know, this doesn't lay out a foundation for NASA or doesn't give it any vision. Senator Cruz made a very good point in a Space News article that this law was designed to transition from one administration to the current one. So this is basically a stopgap law. It's not really going to have a lot of visionary stuff. But starting with the 2018 Authorization Act, Senator Cruz said he's pretty enthusiastic about really start moving forward with some new goals for NASA. So that's really going to be the act to look for. And I'm sure they'll start working on the process towards the end of this year on that new act.
Why does this one have to be bare-bones, skeleton, nothing in it?
Well, it isn't really bare-bones. There's a lot in it. I know I parsed through the entire law for this coming issue of the press. Yeah, I parsed through it and summed it up. So there's a lot in there, but it's mainly a stopgap measure, you know, to keep things moving in a certain direction until to get this new presidency underway. And starting with 2018, Senator Cruz is really enthusiastic about moving forward with some other elements to NASA's mission as well.
So aside from wanting to send Congress to space, which I totally support, what's in it?
In the 2017 authorization?
Correct.
A lot. Oh, boy, where do I start? Well, there's a lot of the basic things, you know, comes out with the basic funding of about, I think it's a little over $19 billion for 2017, and it basically amends some provisions of NASA law and gives some different authorizations. So it's pretty standard stuff, but there are a few obscure things that are in there that really surprised me. Like for one, the law requires the White House Office of Science, Technology, and Policy look at the Apollo landing sites on the moon and come up with an idea, or at least study the issues of what it's going to take to actually preserve them, you know, as historical sites. This is an issue that comes up a lot. I know. I've talked to you about it. I've written about it. Beth O'Leary out in New Mexico. She's very much into this on the archaeological aspect. But that Congress actually directed the White House Office of Science Technology Policy to come back with them for the plan for it is pretty significant, because they're really looking to study the problem first without slapping a duct tape fix on it.
Okay. Well, that means that they probably think there's a danger of somebody getting there that can mess the sites up.
Well, I think you're looking more along the lines of, you know, things, there's going to be some commercial missions on the moon pretty soon, and you know, there's probably going to be an influx of other countries going to the moon, and these sites are pretty. It isn't just the artifacts themselves that are important, but the actual footprints, the tracks themselves are pretty historic too, because for the most part, basically those things are pretty pristine. So they kind of want to try and save those a little bit, but there's issues with the Outer Space Treaty and such that might, you know, prevent them from actually, you know, saying you can't go in here. And so that's basically what this directive is to study the issue and see what kind of solutions have come up to preserve them.
What else can you highlight out of 27?
I'm just scrolling through it right now. Obviously, SLS gets a big, you know, gets a big push for Yay. You know, Yay SLS, we're going to move forward with that. I'm not going to get into the details of that because that's a whole issue we can talk about all show. It also, it looks like it directs the administration, NASA, to basically conduct an evaluation of the ARM program, the S-word redirect mission. Although it's interesting because President Trump's budget for FY 2018 actually cancels the asteroid redirect mission. So for 2017, NASA's going to still do some evaluations and basically see if is there a better way we can do that, utilizing commercial, for example, and what the cost benefits are, you know, whether it be cost effective to do that or, you know, continue on with the government mention. So that's on the plate again. Basically, we have the thing, the direct administrator, to basically work with a non-government agency to do a study of Mars, see what it's going to do to take us to get there in 2033. So there are a few studies in there as well that are very, and I mean, I don't know, I'm kind of studied out, to be honest with you. We've done studies upon studies, and most times they don't get acted upon. Some sense of Congress resolutions, in other words, where Congress is coming out saying, this is our position on certain topics within NASA's role. That's in there quite a bit. There's a lot of things. The bill was over 100 pages long, and I think my summation of it is about 6 to 8 pages long to, you know, basically chunk down what's going on. It's extremely substantial. It's the first bill that NASA passed, that the Congress passed in almost 6 years, and so the first time this president has actually signed one of these into law for almost 6 years, which is pretty good.
What do you see for real policy, not all of this excitement rhetoric, but real policy for starting up a moon program?
I don't know. I'm not going to play progression here and tell you what I think because I have my gut tells me we're not going to really see what that policy is going to be until a national space policy comes out. And that's probably going to be a couple years from now until that's actually published. That's where the president basically sits down and say, these are my goals for outer space. This is the direction the country should go. Congress could get very active in it. Like I mentioned before, Senator Cruz wants to start on the 2018 Authorization Act towards the end of this year to get ready for signing. He wants to probably have signed for the end of the year for 2018. He could move some things in some direction because he's on the Commerce Committee in the Senate, and they're a very powerful committee. In fact, he's a chairman of that subcommittee for space of that committee. So a very powerful position and a very influential position for that matter. So what's exactly going to happen? I don't know. It's anybody's guess, and we can argue back and forth what it should be or what it could be. Not going to really know what it is until it actually starts formulating and gets out there.
Anything more you're hearing about a possible name for the NASA administrator? And I see Bridenstine has been participating in some video conferences. I've seen some stuff on YouTube and things.
Yeah, he's been pretty prolific and busy. I saw some interesting tweets, for lack of better words, on social media that I don't know were very speculative at best. I'm not gonna repeat them here. I'll talk to you about them in private. I just thought they were kind of disturbing, and I was and a bit cynical. But my guess is, you know, bottom line is that your guess is as good as mine. Right now, NASA administrator is not on the top of the list.
Yeah, I would think they have other priorities.
Especially with the screw up, you know, what happened this past week with, you know, with the healthcare bill, that was just a fiasco, and they're kind of regrouping right now. I'm sure it's on the list, and I'm sure there's somebody working towards that end. And I don't think Representative Bernstein is going to give any gimmies about, you know, what his ambition, where he is on that list, or even if he is on that list.
Well, if they really want to regroup, a lot of heads need to fall and go by the wayside. But they're not consulting with me, so what can I say? But
well,
I mean, you can't have a bunch of jerks fix a problem that got there because they're a bunch of jerks. So
well, I kind of agree with that, but that's for the Trump administration to kind of you know, come to that realization.
Well, I've offered. I sent them all a four-page letter which assured the fact that they would never read it, on why their health care bill stunk and what they should do with it. And then you're being really badly served by the people that are advising you. I sent the letter to Trump, and then I copied the same letter to nine other key people. And, of course, I'll never hear back from anybody. I understand that. And four pages doomed it from the beginning because nobody has time to read four pages.
Well,
but, I felt good.
When it comes to getting in contact with representatives, it's good to have a contact person, not just an innocuous general email address, but an actual trying to get an actual contact person.
Absolutely. I didn't have that. So, but
And I found this immensely helpful. And, you know, working with on certain things with Representative Brinstein's office, I got in touch with one of the senior people who deals with the space stuff, and he's been my point of contact back and forth on a lot of the things we've been working on.
Well, I would still like to get him on the space show, but I guess I've never heard from their office, so I guess that's not going to happen.
I'm in communication every once in a while with the senior staffer. I will try and drop. Drop the line. Actually, I may actually be meeting him maybe going down to D.C. in May and actually having a meeting with him. So if I do have that opportunity, I will pass that invitation along again.
Yeah, I mean, tell him even Mike Griffin, the former administrator, he's been on the show three or four times. Of course, not as administrator. He was on after, he was out of office, but still. And Scott Pace is coming back on. He was deputy administrator. He'll be on in a couple of weeks. So
actually, I would try Senator Cruz's office as well, Senator Cruz is known for his space stuff as much as Brinstein is. But I mean, still, he is a power player in it right now, and he has some pretty interesting ideas. you never know with that.
Well, and the guy also who wants to go to Europa. What's his name? From Texas also.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I'm having another blackout moment here. Representative John Culbreth?
Something like that. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so he wants to do... I've never, ever had a seated elected official or their staffer on the space show. And I have tried many, many times.
Well, I think it's one of those things, nobody wants to be the first, but once somebody is the first, then they all decide, oh, maybe this isn't such a bad idea after all, and just go with it. So, like I said, I will float the idea against my contact down there, and if I do go down to D.C. in May and meet the representative, I will, again, pass on the invitation for you.
Yeah, and I'm a former Tulsa and a former Navy guy, so what the hell? He Indian Navy fighter pilot?
He wasn't a naval aviator, but now he flies with the Oklahoma Air National Guard.
Right, I understand that, but originally he was a naval aviator. All right, what else do you have for us, Michael?
You know what? There's so much we could blanket a whole show with it. I think
you've got one coming up.
I just want to remind you, my first quarter 2017 issue of the Pressy comes out on Tuesday, subscribers, and it's a big one. I mean, it's packed. I must have spent at least about 50 hours or more putting this thing together, and it really, really looks good. I'm looking at the final draft right now, and it's gonna be about 53 pages. But it isn't fluff. It's packed solid with very relevant space law and space policy stuff, and it's going to be a good issue.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to it.
Awesome. Okay, David, I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Michael. Have a good weekend. What's left of it. Listeners, the line is available. We're moving toward a two-hour show. Toll free, 1-866-687-7223. Any topic for space STEM is certainly welcome, and we still have time to hear from you if you want to pick up the toll-free number and call us. If you want to send us an email, and we haven't had too many emails today, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. Just a reminder to many of you, we have no rule about calling open lines more than once during a program. So if we think the show is real crowded or somebody wants to get in on the line, we'll vacate your call. But if it slows down and you have something more to say and you want to call back for a second time or a third time, we don't have any rule against that. I know a lot of radio talk shows do prohibit a second or third call from listeners on the same show. We don't do that. So if you want to call back, that possibility is always there for you. So again, I do, while we're waiting to see if anyone else wants to call us, remind everybody that we have a special show tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. California time. There will be no 2 p.m. program. But I am still waiting for a confirmation from Coyote Smith over at the Air Force University to confirm the show and confirm his phone number. So I have not had confirmation yet from him, and I'm still waiting for that. He's gotten my 3 advanced email reminders. So I'm optimistic that the show will happen, but I guess there's a possibility it won't. So if you tune in tomorrow morning and you are not hearing anything, you're hearing an archive program or something, you know, then you know that Coyote didn't show up or had to cancel the program. If that happens, I'll probably remove the show from upcoming show menu, and then I'll renumber the shows for Tuesday and all of that. So that is a 9:30 a.m. program tomorrow. So, again, I'm stressing, no 2 p.m. show tomorrow. 9:30 a.m. or nothing. California or bust, as they say. We have a new caller calling. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you, please?
This is Marshall, and I'm down in the Dallas area.
Okay, Marshall, what's happening in your world?
Oh, well, too much to go into it because it's off topic and we want to talk space stuff here. At the start of the show, you made a comment about space-based solar power and
yes.
Forbes magazine.
Yeah, somebody's already called in on that, too. Did you hear the call?
Yeah, well, I want to add my own little twist. As you remember, I'm very pro space-based solar power, except the fact that once I was out at the farms and they started building a wind farm around me, I kind of went, oh, it starts to make sense. Whenever you get into a political fight or so on, there are people that are wanting to get assets. And, you know, every one of those wind generators is owned by a utility company. And, you know, it's part of their company value, et cetera, et cetera. It gets depreciated, you know, standard bookkeeping and all that. One of the problems with base-based solar power is who owns the satellite. And they're big, they're expensive, and very few companies probably would, you'd have to have something like Consolidated Edison that services New York City or what is it, Pacific Power and Light or Pacific Power and Gas?
Well,
what
in,
is it,
in Northern
California?
Northern California, it's Pacific Gas and Electric, and in Southern California, it's Southern California Edison.
Yeah, oh, that's the one I was thinking of. And it really takes a huge amount of money to put one up there, and if the government puts it up there, the federal government puts it up there, the federal government owns it. And it doesn't go on any of the utility companies' books as an asset. And that's, I think, one of the biggest problems with moving forward on a whole array of space projects. Who owns them? Who's responsible for maintaining them? Who's responsible for liability of it hitting some other spaceship?
Well, remember, a lot of this is spelled out by treaty. So the U.S. government, if they're launched in America, then the U.S. government has the primary liability for all of what you just said. And they require a minimum loss, maximum loss insurance policy by the private company, whether it be PG&E or Con Ed or whoever it would be. And those maximum minimum loss liability policy are based on a formula of the value of what you're putting up in space and what you're doing. And then after that, the government takes over the liability insurance on the satellite, because as the launching state, by treaty, they have that liability. So that's how that works. Now, even if Con Ed paid for the satellite 100% and paid 100% for a launch and the infrastructure for space solar power, just using them as an example, that would not change the liability situation, which puts the launching country as the primary liability risk taker. So let's say they launched all of this on a Russian rocket in Kazakhstan or someplace.
Oh, that's a good twist.
Okay, so the asset and the infrastructure is owned by a U.S. company, but Russia is the launching company. So the liability issues would run to Russia and then partially to the U.S. and then back to the company. But as the launching state, Russia would have primary liability exposure, you know, for whatever they are putting up into space. And that, it's too bad Michael Listener's not on the phone with us right now. As I understand it, that runs for the life of the project. And if the project gets boosted to a high orbit for graveyard keeping, the liability is still there. If the thing comes back and burns up on Earth, then obviously when it no longer exists, then the liability no longer exists, although there might be liability in the process of returning to Earth. So as I understand how the liability works, that is what happens. And so if anything, you know, happened, for the most part, the insurance by the private company would get used up pretty quickly, and you would be looking at the state to pick up liability claims, which is why you're not seeing anything on the Cosmos's Iridium collision when you know, the Soviet Union dumped mm-hmm. their nuclear thing in Canada. They never paid all of the claims for that. You know, and the list goes on and on and on. So it's when states are involved, there's no assurance that you'll ever come up with a settlement.
Yeah, I was going to say collecting liability insurance through the Russian courts is probably a little bit on the futile side.
Well, again, I wish Listener was listening or were still on the phone with us. But I think that's how it works. But now, as for not being able to put these items on their balance sheet and count them as an asset that they could depreciate, you're probably on to something there. But to put them on their balance sheet also means they would have had to pay or incur debt for that asset. So it mm-hmm. would be an offsetting line on assets versus equity and liability. You know, they have to balance. So you could list it as an asset, but you'd have it listed as a liability somehow, too, depending on whether it was mm-hmm. debt or it was just a depreciating asset. And I'm assuming that the tax laws, this is a big assumption because I don't know anything about the tax laws for writing off and amortizing a space asset. So I don't know if there's accelerated depreciation. I don't know the first thing about it. But I would imagine.
Well, the Section 179 in the U.S. tax code is wonderful for farmers, but it doesn't cover space equipment.
Well, no, there probably is something special for ComSat because they've been around for a long time, so this is not a new issue for that. So I imagine that they've got some pretty hefty tax benefits for putting infrastructure or ComSats into space. I would imagine the code has something in there that gives them some really cool write-offs for doing that to sort of mitigate the tax impact of their development cost. But I don't know what it is, and I would imagine that if you're you know, putting up a, you know, a huge infrastructure for space solar power, you would be entitled to some pretty generous tax infrastructure savings. But I have no idea what they would be, and they might force Congress to change the law to be able to do something like that. I don't know. I mean, that they may say you got to change the law for us to be able to pursue this kind of business. Now, if people think that, no, Congress is not going to change the law, think about what they did in 2004 with the Commercial Space Act. They changed the law for space tourism, and then think about all the states that have, in the meantime, come up with absolutely zero liability laws, at least on the state level, so that if somebody's launching a commercial space flight with tourists on board, there's no liability to the company if the thing heads south, you know, under state law, not federal law.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they may very well customize some tax code stuff to facilitate this kind of investment. And that would be interesting to see what they did. I've not really ever thought about that, and I've never had an opportunity to talk to any accountants that know really anything about that. But I would imagine there's some pretty good amortization scheduling for space infrastructure and commsats.
Yeah, that almost comes up as at least half of Space Show. So maybe it's worth 1 hour having space asset accountants come in and talk about depreciation rates, you know, cost risk analysis and insurance. Wow, that's a big topic.
Well, maybe we have an accountant listening to the show who would like to call an open line show or email me and talk about the benefits or the limitations or the liabilities of tax law, U.S. tax law, and putting satellites and stuff in space. I think it really would be interesting to understand what that is. I have had space insurance people on the show before, but not recently. And that's also interesting to hear how they really do insure launches and insure payloads and how they determine, you know, the premium and the risk and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those would be an interesting program, and maybe I will follow up on it. But for any CPAs that are out there, and if you know this stuff about space, let me know, and we'll talk about it on air.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the time, and I'm happy to hear that you like the idea.
Well, I still don't think space solar power is worth a hoot, but I'm, you know, open to it, and I can think of a lot worse ways for government to spend money than on researching and development space solar power. So.
Yeah, well, when I spreadsheeted out, space solar power beats out the wind generator by just a little bit.
Probably.
But on the other hand, that's not the way utility companies want to manage it. So you got to get the utility companies to agree.
So I just heard from Coyote, and our show is on. Listeners, again, that is 9:30 in the morning, California time. So adjust to your local time zone. Okay, Marshall, anything else?
No, that's enough fun for me today.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. So, listeners, we're approaching a two-hour show, but if anybody wants to call in, there is still time. And again, let me repeat, we do have contact with Coyote. The show is on 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, and I've read his paper on the reasons why we need a U.S. Space Corps, and it's really interesting. It's called, I don't know if he's got it on the net or not, it's called America Needs a U.S. Space Corps. I don't know, you might be able to Google a title for that and see if you can find it on the net. America Needs a U.S. Space Corps. Let's see, I've got another email from the blog coming in from Rick. Following up on the discussion with Marshall regarding space solar power and whose books these are on, I wonder how the books work for something like the TVA or Hoover Dam. How does this relate to the power companies? So I can tell you a little bit about that, Rick. So when Hoover Dam was built, It was built by government bond financing, so the government owned it. And it was actually very, very successful until it joined in a coalition of other power structure entities, including dams plus other kinds of structures for the West. And that consortium hasn't done well, but Hoover Dam on its own did really well. It paid back the bonds before their maturity date and has been successful. But it does require a lot of maintenance and upkeep and infrastructure repair and generator repair and remodeling and stuff like that. So as I understand it, Hoover Dam has always remained a U.S. government project, even though it's part of this coalition. And I think the coalition has control for certain reasons for these water resources, but I believe that the government still has, if there's a deed involved, and I doubt that there's a deed, but the Hoover Dam would still be a government project. And I think it's called the Western Power Consortium. I did a paper that you've heard me talk about on the Space Show from time to time that compared government spending projects and then looked at Apollo and space as the last project, which came out pretty good compared to the school lunch program, or maybe it was the school breakfast program, and then Hoover Dam. Now, TVA did not come out as well. It was not managed very well. It had a lot of corruption and crime involved in it. I think some people got busted in its earlier history. And it was a different structure than Hoover Dam. But I think the TVA is the Tennessee Valley Authority. And I don't know exactly how ownership in the assets is held. But I think there's also nuclear power plants involved in the Tennessee Valley Authority area. So I think they're very different. But I do recall that Hoover Dam was financed by government bonds, and the bonds were paid off ahead of time. So it was a government infrastructure project, and I'm pretty sure, let's see if I can find it real quick, I'm pretty sure it was part of the Western Power Consortium, and if I'm right about that, that would tell us who actually owns the Western Power Consortium. So I imagine it's probably a partnership with the U.S. government and the various states that are involved in it. Let's see if I can find it. West Power. So I don't know if I can find it while I'm talking on the show. And you know, I would have to look it up in the paper that I wrote years and years ago. To be certain of what it is, because I could be wrong. So that's the best I can do on it. If anybody wants to update what I said on the blog, after the show ends, please do. But I do know that it was an extremely successful project, Hoover Dam. It was really instrumental in our winning the World War II. And when it went into the power consortium, its performance was dragged down because some of the other participants in the power consortium were not doing that well. But on its own, Hoover Dam has been an amazing contributor to the growth in the economy of the West. I don't have anything else. I don't have anyone calling, and I don't have any more emails. So, listeners, we're going to wrap at 2 hours into our Open Lines program. And if anybody wants to get a hold of us, boy, you got to do it quickly, because when I get through with my closing comments and I push the button, I'm not answering the phone. So if you, this is your last chance, or forever hold your peace. Now, the next Open Line show is when I get back from the symposium in Colorado Springs. And the reason I did that is because I have never attended the Space Foundation Symposium. I am looking forward to it. I have heard upwards of 12,000 to 15,000 people can be there, that the exhibit hall is unbelievable. And the people that will be there, you know, it's anybody and everybody who's part of anything. So I am looking forward to it. I will get to meet all of the NASA center directors and the acting head of NASA, because that's Lightfoot, because we don't have a NASA director yet. And I will be working with them during the week to polish the panel that we're doing. And it should be a fun thing. So I scheduled the open line show for the Sunday I get back. And because I wanted to, you know, talk and tell you about the symposium. One other thing, I am not taking tape recorders with me. I am not doing any remote interviews while I am there. But I am going to do my best to invite people to do full space show programs. You know, so that is my goal, more than to try to go do an interview on the scene. I really want to get people on the show for a full space show program rather than a 20 or 30 minute taped interview, which I've done in the past with conferences, but it's not really what I want to do this time. So that is it for today's Open Lines program. Remember, everybody, 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, California time, with Coyote and the American Proposal for a Space Corps. And thank you for calling. Thank you for emailing. Everybody have a terrific rest of the week, and because we're still on the weekend, and a good week. Tuesday night is a special program. I'll plug that real quick. Jay Whitner, Kirby Icon, Dale Scran. And they're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the National Space Society. So that's kind of a special program. So you will want to hear that. And then don't know yet about Hotel Mars. That's still in the making. Friday, Dr. Anita Sengupta of JPL is back with us, and Anita will be updating us on her work with the COLD, C-O-L-D, Atom Lab. And we've talked about that with Anita before, and this will be an update program Friday morning. And then Sunday, Golden Oldies, Suborbital Sunday. That program is already listed on upcoming show menu for Sunday. So if you wanted our Golden Oldies suggestions, that's it. So I think what's going to happen for the Golden Oldies suggestions for next week, they're going to be favorite picks, and rather than, say, themes like suborbital. And I'm going to list three favorite picks. Some of them are outrageous Kool-Aid shows that might entertain you and give you a sample of the Kool-Aid over the years. And others are going to be real interesting, advanced programming. So it'll be a mix of Fantasyland, yippee, and the real McCoy. So, you know, maybe you'll be able to listen to all the suggestions that I'm giving you, because it's going to be three suggestions for each show period that I'm gone. So that's a lot of space show programming. But they're all such cool shows. You really should do nothing during the week that I'm gone other than listen to Golden Oldies space show programs. Thank you again, everybody, for calling and for listening, and for those of you that emailed or used the blog. And we appreciate it. So keep looking up and have a safe week. Goodbye from the Space Show, and goodbye from David.